Kevin.
Hi, Kyle. So, yeah, okay, glad we connected here.
Brilliant, yes.
All right. Well, if you're ready, let's get right down to it.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, let's start with your year of graduation and your major.
Brilliant. So I graduated in 2014 with a degree in music business management.
Excellent. Was that the spring, by the way?
That was the spring.
Cool. And do you recall which track you were on? Entrepreneurial track,
Yep,
marketing
I was
track.
a marketing. Yep, marketing track.
Very nice. And what was your principal instrument?
Guitar was my principal instrument.
Cool. All right. We'll get to your path later, but for now, tell us about your current job.
Sure. So I'm currently a contracted product designer. I very recently left a job where I was director of product design with a startup company here in San Francisco. But at the moment, I kind of work with a number of different companies. To name a few, there's a financial technology company, a biotech company, and a company that makes kind of app market plugins. So I do design work for a company that, for example, if you're a user of Squarespace or Wix or Webidoo, we make the plugins that add functionality to those websites.
Gotcha. Do you mind sharing the
And I'm
names
happy
of
to talk more
these
about my
companies you
specific
contract
job.
for?
Yeah, sure. Sure. Most prominently, power.io, and that's power without an E, so it's power.io is one of the bigger ones. I'd say that's probably the most prominent, the most like the predominant, the main company that I work with. And the company that I worked with in the past was called Gone. So if you go to, for example, Gone, which is GoneSMS.com. That's one of our websites we've got. So that's one of the projects that I did for them. And again, I worked with them for about a year as a director of product design, which was a more strategic role. Was good fun.
Sure. Now, for the perhaps less familiar among us, could you explain what product design is?
Sure. So there's a lot of different people in the company that tend to think in these siloed kind of ways. So if you've got a marketer or you've got the strategic thinking founders of the company or you have the people who write code, everyone thinks in their own little silo. And so my job was to take all the work and all the constraints that everybody in the company has, mesh them together in a package that looks nice, is branded, makes sense for the people using it, makes money, and also moves business objectives forward. So there's a lot of different motivations floating around in a company. My role as a director of product design was to grab all that and reify it in a product that resonated with people, that looked nice, that felt nice to use, and that everyone could be proud of.
Very nice. And you said that you're working still on product design currently. So,
Yep, that's correct.
same stuff. By the way, you said your work as a contractor. How do people contract you? Are you totally dependent? Do you work through an agency or a recruiter?
So I usually just do it personally. As out in San Francisco, you do meet a lot of people who require these kind of things done. So for me, it's all word of mouth or people that I've met and asking around, people saying, "Oh, I know this guy who does design work. Why don't you talk to him?" And it's a really strong community out here too. Community of people who are into design, who are into design thinking, who read these books about different design processes. And once you start getting around these communities, whether they be book clubs, meetups, or networking events, you meet enough people to satisfy any amount of work.
I see. And when you're working as the product designer, are you working by yourself? I mean, you, let's try that again. Obviously, by definition, you're working with lots of other people in the company, but are you the one product designer, or are you, like, working directly with a team of other product designers?
So I'm the sole product designer in a lot of the environments that I've worked in. I do work very closely with front-end developers. I noticed in some of the previous interviews you've done, you've interviewed a few web developers. Those are the kind of guys that I would work with. I do write code for them as well. So you may have heard them speaking of different front-end technologies that they've worked with. I work with those same things, and I try to implement them in a way that makes their job really easy. But that's the closest thing to another product designer that I work with currently.
And you said you do write a little bit of web design code.
Yep. Almost every single day, I write a little bit.
Gotcha. All right. So, hey, would you mind describing your typical week? Oh, first question. About how many hours do you work per week?
Sorry? One more time?
About how many hours...
Could you repeat the question for me?
Yes. About how many hours per week do you work? I know tech could sometimes be very intense.
I'd say... Right. Certainly a regular work week at least. So 40 to 50, I'd say. 40, 50 hours.
Gotcha. And hey, can you just describe in greater detail what your typical work day, or if you prefer work week, looks like?
Sure. I'll describe a Monday for you, for example. On Monday, I come in and I usually meet one-on-one with one of the founders of the company, and we try to establish priorities for the week. We may look at data from tests that we've been running in the past. So, for example, if I ever want to test an idea that I have based on a new look at the website, for example, if I wanted to have a moving video background versus an image background, if I really wanted to know which one of those is more successful in getting people to sign up or getting people to upgrade their accounts, what I could do is set up a test so that 50% of traffic goes to one and 50% of traffic goes to the other. And then we measure the results.
It's called an A-B test.
And so maybe
right?
On Monday I'll come in. Exactly. An A-B test. I run a ton of A-B tests. I've got like 12 of them running right now. And so that's the kind of data that we'll look at the beginning of the week, and we'll say, okay, so these are very effective in a short term. And so why don't we set, 60% of your priorities for building on this and building the momentum of these tests because we see a lot of promise in them. But at the same time, we're thinking long term. So we might say, okay, but whereas your priorities are to finish these things this week, it's also important that you make progress on these things this week. So if it's, for example, if we're seeing a lot of, if our numbers are appreciably increasing as a result of new icon designs in an app market somewhere, most of my priorities might be keep working on those and keep implementing those in new marketplaces because that's making us money. But at the same time, we could say, you know what, our entire user experience from sign up to upgrade is a little bit shaky. So why don't we take a good portion of your time this week and give that an audit and see how you can make that better. And then at the end of the week, the entire company meets together. We go over the results of some of the things that we've worked on. And we try to plan for the next week. Just like these are some things that we learned. These are some things that didn't go well. Assumptions that we verified. Assumptions that were totally wrong. And we take a moment to talk about everybody's different priorities so that everybody together understands what's going on holistically.
Sure. Very good. Next question for you. Of course, to qualify for an interview, you have to enjoy what you do. So just tell us, what do you enjoy about your field?
I love how varied it is. I love how I can do something technical and measurable, but at the same time, it requires a sense of, it's human, it's personable. I speak with other people. I try to understand other people. It's very empathetic and very explorative. I've always been an autodidact, so it's an opportunity for me to learn as much as I can, and it's valuable for me to learn what I can. So as I'm doing these things that make me personally feel good, i.e. writing code and generating things and talking with people and learning, that's valuable for my position. I'm a more valuable employee, I'm a more valuable product designer when I understand what other people are going through even more. And so for my job to both be something that I can read in a book and study, and at the same time something that's so me, that's what makes my job so enjoyable.
Great. Great answer. Hey, I do have one question. I'm curious about a product designer. My wife works in software QA. Mm-hmm. And, well, of course, things vary a huge amount individually. Let's say that in general, quality engineers are paid a little bit less than programmers, though considerably more than technical writers. I was curious, like, where does product design fall in relative to someone who is pure writing code?
I'd say that we do make less. San Francisco is a bit tough. Everything is sort of scaled up, the cost of living, and, of course, everyone's salaries as well. If I were to speak in terms of percentages, I know the salaries of senior software engineers out here, because I have a lot of friends who are senior software engineers, and they make a considerable amount of money. If I were to name a percentage, I would say product designers, a senior product designer versus a senior software engineer, maybe 75%.
Okay. What, 75% of a lines. Very solid number is still pretty solid.
Exactly. So yeah, everyone is generously compensated out here.
Great answer. Okay. So, hey, right now I'd like us to take it back to 2014, although we can go earlier if need be. There you are, graduating with your degree in music business. I'm guessing that you weren't thinking product designer. So I'd like to hear your whole story. How did you, step by step, how did you get from there to where you are now?
Absolutely. So it all began making music videos back in the week. There were a couple of friends that I really enjoyed speaking with. Joe Barnard, if you might remember him. He was one friend with whom I really liked talking about video production with. And I made a lot of music videos for friends like Alex McGillivray and Carly Teft. And when I was in Spain, they did the same thing with Prayer Finley. We've been making music videos for people, and then from music videos, we started making graphics and CD artwork for different musicians and coming up with t-shirts, and all the while I was taking these marketing courses, and so I was thinking that everything that I did as a marketing student, I was trying to create this brand and take an artist and think about how photography or how videos or a website could forward their brand and convince people this is what this artist sounds like as a musician, just visually. So I was stretching my skills as a visual designer at that time. And again, I started making websites around that time. It was just very primitive. It was not very good, but I got these websites up, and that was my on-campus job. Yeah, that's what I did instead of finding a job somewhere else in the city. I just did that freelance. And eventually, I met, when I was in France, actually, studying in Valencia. I studied over there in 2013, was in France for MEDEM, and met somebody who, in Boston, was really tied into the startup community. So when I went over to, when I came back to Boston, rather, I started hanging out at all these events, Intelligently is the name of the group, that they're kind of based down in South Boston on Harrison Street. But I'll go there, and everyone would introduce themselves as a company founder, just a business development specialist, and I was sitting there as a student, and I didn't want to identify as just a student. I wanted to say that I was doing something, and I wanted to do something. So I introduced myself as a designer, and then I met another guy there who had a music subscription company, and they needed a designer. And so they said, hey, would you like to work with us? And, of course, me, having never done this before, said, yes, I would love to.
And you're still a at Berkeley at this time?
Yep, still at Berkeley at this time. This was the first semester of my, it was my third year. I graduated in 3 years rather than four.
Gotcha. By the way, I think I heard you say you worked with Prayer Finley.
I did.
Are you aware that she's like the first or second person I interviewed?
Really? I didn't get that far down.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool.
It's indexed. Yeah, you should go. You'll see her interview.
That's really cool. Yeah, her and I were in Valencia at the same time, and she had recorded a song, and she asked for a music video, and it was fun working with her. She's great.
Awesome. So, anyway, back to your story. This is your third year, and you've got this group. You're like, I'm a designer. You want some work? Yeah.
It was like, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, I had no idea what I was doing, but they said, like, hey, we'd like to make a modal sign-up box here. And it's like, okay, I can do that. And fortunately for me, this was a remote gig. So I, every Wednesday, after I got out of class at noon or so, would take a train down to Providence, and I would come back the next morning. And but so they, when I was down there, they would say, here's the things that we need on this site. Like, do you think you could do them? I was like, oh, yeah, of course I can do that. And then I'd spend the week looking up how to do that and learning on the internet how to add these modal signup fields and like what, how do I set colors on a website? But the internet taught me throughout the week, and I would go up down every Wednesday and show them what I did. And they'd be like, oh, cool. Great.
By the way, would you say the internet taught you? Were you just Googling stuff, or were you going through specific tutorials or online education? I'm curious as to.
So what got me started was Code Academy. That's what got me started, just generally familiar with what HTML and CSS and JavaScript were. There's another site that if anybody has any experience debugging a program, they'll know it. It's called Stack Overflow. And so for me, I've developed such celerity with finding solutions on Stack Overflow. It's this one website where people post their problems and people answer it. And so I'll just constantly search, you know, how to make a modal. And somebody has already posted that on Stack Overflow. So I'd read that, read the solution, memorize the solution, and then just remember that from then on. And I still, to this day, even though I'm implementing A-B tests in a really, really complex Rails application, I still use Stack Overflow almost every day.
That's great to hear. Yeah. By the way, I'm imagining you must have been awfully busy going through Berkeley in 3 years and doing this very, you know, challenging work on top of it.
It gets busier in the next part of the story.
Okay, by the way, one quick, last quick question before you continue is, if you don't mind sharing, do you recall for this, your very first computer-type job, how much they were paying you?
They were paying me, again, I was like a part-time, it was almost like an internship, but it was a paid internship. I'm trying to remember how much I got paid. I think it was something along the lines of $200 a week or something.
Oh, and that was for like 5 hours.
Yeah, and so again, that was just for my days that I would spend down on Wednesday. But I would have accepted anything, honestly. Actually, you know what? I think it might have been $400 a week. No. Oh, I can't even remember. I'm so sorry. It was somewhere. Let's just call it $300 a week because I cannot remember.
But in other words, for if you were down there, were you down there like the full 8 hour days, or was it more like a 4 or 5?
I'd say more like a 4 or 5 because I would usually get there at let's say maybe 2 o'clock.
I mean,
and I would try to catch the train at 7 or 8.
Sure.
Unless I stayed until the next day, but I usually tried to catch it back at night.
I've heard of some tech-based internships where the person's getting 12 or 15 an hour, but you're being paid pretty generously.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got to say, a lot of the internships out here in San Francisco pay more than my current job does. There's some companies that pay a ton of money.
Wow.
Yeah. Quora, especially, Quora's one. Facebook, if you get hired after an internship at Facebook, they give you a huge bonus. And I can't remember exactly what it is, but it is considerable.
Wow.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
Very nice. So, all right, let's take it back to your path. You're there still at Berkeley doing this one day a week, pretty lucrative internship and you're learning a lot.
Absolutely. So continuing, this was actually during the that first semester of my last year, I actually was part of that MIT class. It was the first semester that we got the Founders Journey program working through Berkeley ICE. And so I had a couple different...
ICE Institute for Contemporary Entrepreneurship.
Right, right. So I was working with ICE. I was working with Panos and with Melanie Stevenson to start that program. And that was one project of mine. That was my internship. And so we got that started up. I started taking this class over at MIT, and we were able to get credit for it, but we were only able to get 3 credits for it. And so Berkeley's course load, you kind of have to take a lot of classes in order to fill up the full 16 credits. I had to max out as many credits as I could because I was, in a way, trying to graduate a little bit sooner, whether it be just because I wanted to move on or for money. But in any case, I really wanted to graduate soon. So I had Berkeley had 7 classes with Berkeley and my MIT course, plus this job that I had. And it was just a crazy amount of work that last sprint out of Berkeley. But that MIT class, I met my first friend that I had in San Francisco. When I moved out to San Francisco and I had no friends, my first friend came from this MIT class. This was a class where they brought in a whole bunch of different entrepreneurs, startup founders, and they would just talk to us, and they would have no script. We'd just be able to freely ask them questions, and it was really inspiring to see a group of these magnificently successful people speaking as if they were just humans, regular people. We had, for example, Drew Houston, who is worth nearly $1 billion as the founder of Dropbox, just speaking with us. And later on, here in San Francisco, I met up with him again, and I took an Uber with him trying to get from Oakland back to San Francisco, and I offered to split the fare of the Uber. He's like, no, dude, don't worry about it. It's hilarious that I got to hang out with him again. We actually played guitar at a studio over in Oakland, and again, he's got this net worth of, what is it, like $970 million or something.
Wow.
And I offered to split an Uber with him. He's like, no, dude, that's fine.
No, but that's still a nice gesture.
Absolutely. I thought, like, oh, I gotta roll with this guy. What do I do? So the rest of the story, after this MIT class, I was really, really energized on the thought of working with a startup and working in Silicon Valley. And I had a job offer from a political media startup in San Francisco.
Hold on.
Hold on. Yep.
I detected passive voice here. You had a job offer.
Yep, I had a job offer. So I knew from my childhood, I had a really close friend who I used to see on Cape Cod all the time. And he went to Stanford, and he ended up dropping out of Stanford and finding this one guy from Facebook who left Facebook to go start this company with him. And so right off the bat, I knew him, and I contacted him, and I found out that he was working on this thing. On this political news startup. And basically we were having conversations about I would go work for him. And they needed a designer. I was a designer. He was happy with the work that I was doing. We did some preliminary contract work and he was happy with it. And so the momentum was as I was graduating, I was finalizing things to go move out to San Francisco and join this political news startup. And so I actually found an apartment remotely, which is really difficult in San Francisco. Housing out here is ridiculous. And moved out here. By the time I moved out here, it wasn't that they didn't want to hire me. It was that the position itself just no longer existed. Things are so volatile, especially at that pre-funding stage. The job just didn't exist anymore. They couldn't hire a designer at that point.
Wow, so you moved out for a job, and now there was no job.
Now there was no job. I was living in Pacific Heights, which is a very, very, very expensive part of San Francisco. San Francisco is expensive. Pacific Heights is very expensive.
Ouch.
Yeah. And so I was absolutely hemorrhaging money out there. But eventually I found, through a friend that I made in Providence, Rhode Island, while I was working with that music subscription startup, he had gone through another startup accelerator called TechStars, And so I sent my resume to him. I was like, hey, do you know anybody who's looking for a designer right now?
And was this he in one San friend, Francisco, or was he still in Providence?
He was still in Boston at the time. Okay. And so he had founded a company called Fetch Notes. His name was Alex Schiff. And so he so thoughtfully sent my resume along to the entire network of Techstars founders all across the country. And he said this, it was really, really a short, simple email, but what he said in it was so valuable. He said, here's my friend Kyle. He's a little bit junior, but he's very, very talented for his years of experience. If you want to talk to him, you'll have to go through me. And the fact that he said that last part, like, you'll have to go through me, that was so legitimizing. And people went to Alex because they trusted Alex. And they said, like, yeah, I'd love to talk to this guy. So I interviewed with good 8 companies from that, because we limited it down to whomever was in San Francisco. And a lot of these Techstars companies were in Austin or in Boston. And so, again, I interviewed with 8 of them. And one company that I interviewed with, Gone, I met the founder, and he's from Argentina. And I had just learned this Argentinian slang word called boludo, which means – maybe translates to dumbass, but they basically just use that to say, like, hey, what's up, dude? So right off the bat, I was really bonding with the founder of this company because I just like, hey, boludo. And he's like, oh, you know what boludo means? Because so this company is split between San Francisco and Tandil, Argentina. And so I was working remotely in San Francisco with these developers who were in Argentina, and I was having a blast. I was loving it. And I started off as just a visual designer with them.
Oh, just redesigning. So you do speak Spanish then?
Yes. So when I was in Valencia with the study abroad program, that's when I learned to speak Spanish, because we were just floating around in the Galileo Galilei dorms, which was the dormitory for the University of Valencia over there. So we were hanging out with kids from small towns in Spain who didn't speak any English. And we spent every single day hanging out with them and walking around Valencia, and it was incredible. And so when I started working with these guys in Argentina, I spoke with a really heavy Spain accent, and they say these words that just don't exist in Argentina. They're like, ¿qué tal estáis? I'd say that, and they'd be like, what are you saying? I don't understand. Because they just speak a totally different dialect. And so it was a ton of fun, because I was not only the Shanky, which means Yankee or American, but I was the Shanky that talked like their grandfather might have talked. Like, this really old, really strange sounding dialect of Spanish from Spain. And so I really, really quickly bonded with all those guys. It was a ton of fun. I really liked working with them. And my role as a designer started off as just a visual design role. They basically said, like, redesign our application. Like, it looks really bad. Just do something with it. So I did. But then I started diagnosing all these issues with it, all of these problems that I thought I could solve by making bigger decisions. Like, instead of just picking a certain shade of blue and using that on all the links, I said, you know, like, why do we have this application, which this is such a, you know, low frequency operation that is solved by this operation? Like, why do we even have an iOS app? Why does somebody need to download this and go through all of these different steps in order to achieve the outcome? Why can't we make an SMS service? I mean, so Gone SMS was my first big project with them. And
you sort of lost me there.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
What's SMS? Definitely
you got
a little SMS.
Yeah. So SMS is text message.
Okay.
So what we effectively did was we took all of this complex stuff. So what the company did was it was like an on-demand version of eBay. So if you wanted to sell any sort of electronics that you had, they would appraise it. They would send somebody to your home to pick it up. They would list it on different marketplaces, take a commission, and transfer all the proceeds to you. So it was just a really easy way.
Making it really easy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the issue was, that's not something that people do frequently. And they had an iOS application that did that. So you download the iOS app, you create an account, you connect your email address and whatnot. You take a picture of whatever you're selling. They ask questions about it. You answer questions. They give you a price. You accept the price. They send a person. The person picks it up. You track where it is. You're tracking when it's listed. And then you tell them how to get your money at the end. It's just a ton of steps and a ton of Chrome, which is another technical word that just means like the bars and the non-interactive stuff on the application. It's just, it doesn't need to be there. It was really inefficient.
Okay.
And so what I said was, actually, guys, like founders, you have this objective to do this. You have this objective to increase the per item value of everybody. Marketers, you have this nebula of you don't really know what to do with this application. How are you going to market it? And the developers, you actually built this entire system that you want to use better. And support team, you guys are really good, but no one ever talks to you. So with an SMS platform, we connected the people directly with the support team. The increased trust as a result of doing that increased the per item value of all the items that people were selling. The developers, we created a backend system that made this new system mesh completely seamlessly with what they already had. And then with the marketers, we said, here, we've got this completely minimalistic applications, minimal experience that matches up really well with this community of people called the minimalists. And so if you could take different ideas and topics from that community of people and use that in your marketing, mm-hmm. there we go. Now everyone's thinking in unity and we're working on the same thing, trying to push it forward. So a lot of that was George Howard. George Howard was the one who just taught me about community and conversation and trust and transparency and all these really valuable things in terms of marketing. I used that to bring everyone together and create this product. And again,
it just to be totally clear, you mean that stuff you learned from George Howard as opposed to he wasn't directly involved here.
No. Yeah, that was just from his classes. That was mostly creative promotion.
Gotcha.
And again, from there, we increased GMV by 2.2x gross merchandise value. So the amount of goods that we brought in, mm-hmm. we increased the average item value by 220% as a result of doing that.
Wow.
That's
really impressive.
It was like, for me at first, it was like, I don't know how this happened. It just felt really natural to try to solve the issue in that way. And then we just saw the numbers just rocketing up. We're like, wow, this is incredible. And then from there, I just took this more strategic role with the company because they're like, oh, so Kyle not only speaks English really well because he's native, he knows what everybody wants. And so resultantly, they started bringing me along to all these different trips to go visit different companies. So we had not only our consumer application, the SMS platform that we were trying to work on, we also had these corporate development things like fundraising or trying to establish partnerships with other companies. Mm-hmm. And they would bring me along to those meetings because they knew that I could perform in those environments. They knew that not only was I more articulate than them, but I knew just as well as they did what the other companies had, what we had, and how we could mash those two things together to move everything forward. And so we forced a really compelling progress with companies like Skype and Amazon. And actually, that kind of stuff is a little bit private, but I'll just mention that to you anyway.
Sure.
you're
being recorded, amazing. Right?
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Okay.
but anyways, we had some really, really nice meetings, and like, I'm not talking about the details of any of those things, mm-hmm. but regardless, really compelling meetings. It was a ton of fun to be in those environments. Again, we had created this SMS platform, a conversational interface, they call them. And so we went down and we met with Skype, who they were building their conversational interface. They wanted to know what kind of struggles and what kind of benefits a conversational interface was. And it was really, really cool to be part of that environment. And then moving along, I just after a while felt, this has been a ton of fun, but my product team is down in Argentina right now. I'm not working with people every single day. I'm sort of coming into an office by myself and dreaming up things. And what I really wanted was to use other people as a model for my own effectiveness. And so I wanted to join a team of people who were smarter than me. I wanted to be the dumbest person in the room. And that's one of the reasons I moved to San Francisco is to find that and to be around all these brilliant people. And so that kind of brings us to now. A contracting, just putting feelers out.
You just figured you want to try something new. Hey, guys, been fun. I'm going to contract and get a little more experience.
Exactly.
And you said before that you've been getting your contracting gigs, just that you've gotten to know a bunch of people out there.
Exactly.
Very nice.
It's a very in-demand skill set. It's a very in-demand position, a job. And so it's not too difficult.
And by the way, when you get a contract, how long do you typically work for?
It depends on the project. I'd say on average it's a month or two.
Gotcha. All right. Very nice. Let's move on to the third part of the interview. So my first question for you is, what, if any, is your current relationship with music?
So I'm very tied in with an electronic music community here in San Francisco. It's very tight-knit. Music out in this city is a little bit tough. And so the communities of people who play music are really, really tight-knit. So really close with the electronic music community, but at the same time, there's a group of people who love playing jazz. They call it the Oakland jam scene. And so they'll, for example, play shows in San Francisco somewhere. And if you know where those shows are going on, you can show up with an instrument and join in. So they'll be playing at these really swanky bars and everything, but I'll see different trombone players that I know who are not part of that band, who just showed up and are now playing with them. And they're introducing themselves to other people while on stage. And to know that that kind of thing is going on, whereas most people are kind of ignoring it. Again, people in San Francisco, they go to a bar, they spend $14 on a cocktail. They're there to just drink the cocktails and enjoy the experience. But to know that all these little interesting things are going on with the musician community, that's awesome. And in addition to that, I always have...
So, do you go and play with these people, or is just like... You go
I haven't done it yet.
Okay.
I haven't done it yet, but I do hang out and I do know them.
Gotcha.
I recognize them. But one of these days, I will perform again. I just have to get my swing chops back up. But another thing that I do is I always have a digital audio workstation open. So in the background, whenever I'm working, I've got Ableton Live open. And I'm always producing some little loop of electronic music. And it's just something that I can do to, if I need to clear my head or stay creative if I'm doing a kind of drone kind of task, I always have this music going, and I just feel creative as a result. And then the last thing, I have a guitar underneath my desk at work. So whenever work ends, if it's a Friday or something, I'll just take it out after everybody leaves and play for an hour.
Very nice. Okay, next question for you is, because you're working in tech, I'm sure you meet a lot of people who studied computer science, and probably some liberal arts graduates who migrated over. But let's say, at least relative to, you know, liberal arts degree or some other degree like that, is there anything that you feel that your Berkeley education did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing now?
I think that it's kind of like the difference between hard knowledge and soft knowledge. Like, hard knowledge being these frameworks and like exact definitions for things. That's something that a lot of other people come here with. Soft knowledge being sort of the flexibility to react in different contexts, to contextualize things, of course, but then again, to just kind of figure it out as you go along. And this idea that it's the people you're around and you responding to what other people are doing, you being really thoughtful and listening to other people. I think that's the hugest thing for me, is that I came and even if I didn't necessarily have the chops, if I didn't have the raw talent to do it, there's so many valuable things that people need to do out here. And that's, you know, showing up on time and listening and learning. And that's the kind of stuff that I think Berkeley did particularly well, is to give you this almost a confidence to kind of find your place in any circumstance, no matter what it is.
Gotcha. All right, good answer. Yeah, I think you said some nice stuff about George Howard's class, too. Which class?
Yeah, so yeah, more specifically, that was creative promotion and new media. And that was a course on marketing that I thought was incredible. I thought he provided a couple of really great books. And George has always been a big proponent of, you know, you learn this stuff in the context of music, but it is universal. And you just got to learn that. He said, if you could sell music, you can sell anything. And that's a pretty cool thing to think about when you're out here, is to think that, I mean, all these things I learned in the context of music, music being so volatile and music being so emotional and so human, that it carries with you, and you can really bring that wherever, and it tends to surprise people when you have this ability to really be empathetic and really think big picture while at the same time being detail-oriented. That's all music school right there.
Gotcha. All right, great answer. Let's do the flip side of the question then, which is, of course, you went to Berklee knowing it gave you one degree, a Bachelor of Music.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything where you look back on your Berklee education and you say, you know, it would have been really useful to learn this thing before I graduated, and Berklee could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
Hmm. And that is such a good question, because, I could immediately go to the opposite of soft knowledge, the hard knowledge. I could immediately go there, but again, I went to Berklee for a reason, and that is such a – I personally thought my transition was smooth, and all the things that I had to pick up, again, were just outside my field of study. But a lot of the connections –
yeah.
Maybe a lot of the connections that I make between studying music and studying music business and the kind of stuff I do now, maybe that could have been more clear. I had imposter syndrome for a while, and maybe that's something that it could have solved. And by imposter syndrome, I just mean, like, it came out here, and since I didn't have those hard skills, but I was still doing good work, I never trusted myself and said, Kyle, what you're doing is actually good work. I'd always say, oh, Kyle, you are just fooling everybody so much right now. You're fooling everyone. You're so convincing that you don't actually have to be good. And I'd always doubt myself, but I'm not sure entirely in what way Berklee could help us trust ourselves in other industries. But if there was some way that it could, that would have been really, really helpful.
Great. And by the way, can I just ask, you may have said a little bit of this earlier, just taking it way back. Can you mention how you got involved with this initial group of people who were doing startups? Because that ultimately led you to your career. Had Berklee given you a nudge in that direction? What got you to go there initially?
It actually was not. It was another Berklee student, but it was completely unrelated to Berklee. It was a guy who had just gone to one of those events before. He said, you might actually like this. And I'm not sure how he found it. I think he was just interested in that sort of thing to begin with. But no, before Berklee Ice, there was really nothing pushing us towards exploring the city, exploring different groups of people outside of Berklee, especially startups. Berklee just wasn't pushing us in that direction. And now Berklee Ice definitely pushes us towards tech, but there's a way to get towards tech that's really valuable, and that is that community of startup people in Boston that I think definitely could be tied into a little bit tighter.
Gotcha. Okay. So my next question for you is, you pretty much launched right away into a very good career. Let's even say starting it before you'd even graduated Berklee. And I will say that, in fact, it's uncommon these days that I interview someone who's class of 2014. It's a lot of class of 2008, 2010, some variables. But as you can imagine, there are a lot of people graduating around the time you did who have not yet found that good career path.
Mm-hmm.
And also perhaps people still at Berklee staring out into the big scary world and wondering what they're going to do. For either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
I think that one of the things that I almost rejected when I graduated from Berklee was there's a very, very deep set continuum to there's an internship, and then you work an internship for a couple years. Maybe you'll meet someone to work another internship to get an entry-level job. There was that sort of process that I wasn't necessarily excited about, but there was an opportunity for me to really go somewhere and just succeed by merit, and if I tried hard, you'd see the results of those. It wasn't a matter of me waiting for an opportunity, but more so I could show up somewhere, work really hard, and be recognized for that. And For me personally, that was San Francisco. San Francisco was that environment in which I could, by my own virtue and by my own talent, progress really quickly, like progress as fast as I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone, no matter what you're trying to do, that environment exists. It's looking for that little environment, that little space where you can say, okay, so here's the place where if I just work really hard, I will improve. I will get to where I want to go. But there are these prescribed routes that you can take that people have taken before, and those are slow and those are competitive. If you find your little blue ocean, I think you can do really well. And if you really just, I think one of the things that I did is I looked at myself with a music education. I said, like, this makes me interesting. This makes me special. I should talk about this. And I know, man, I'm trying to think about how to really sum up that answer to that question. That's a really good question.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I will say that I feel like that is, if we could call it a meritocracy where they don't care as much about your degrees and your background, it's very much like, what can you do? Did you figure out great you're in? I associate with that with tech. I feel like tech is kind of a special industry, that not all industries work that way.
Mm.
But certainly tech does.
And I'm definitely fortunate in that me feeling happy and feeling fulfilled in my job coincided with me having a really great job in San Francisco and everything really working out. But it's the most important thing for me was just the fact that I was feeling really good where I am. And music, of course, is always going to be part of my life. And whether I get back to music in the future is yet to be seen. But I can imagine, you know, if music licensing or if music, if publishing adopts a blockchain technology or something like that, some sort of tech infuses itself into music in the future, that'll be a really great opportunity for me to then jump back on. But I'm optimizing right now, or every single day asking myself, am I happy? Am I moving? It's not even like, am I moving towards my goal? It's really just, am I happy where I am? Is there something that is making me unhappy? What can I do to change that? And so instead of this path, I've got like a strange series of stepping stones, and I'm constantly just thinking, am I good right now? No. All right, what can I change? Am I good today? Yes, I'll keep doing this. And by nature, you will end up somewhere where you're happy, because you never stop being happy and fulfilled. Again, I was just lucky that it's in San Francisco and it's working out for me. But I think it's a really big part of it too, is don't wait.
Okay, that's great. And we're at the final question, which is, as they say, you have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, that is another great question. I did tell so much of my story. I'm wondering if there's any part of it that I glossed over. It's really great that all the little things that you pick up at Berkeley, you can see in other people. For example, people at Berkeley, I mean, they spend their whole lives digging so deep into little genres of music that they really like. People do that all over the place. And you can talk to anybody, and everybody in the world's got this little thing that they really like. And you can get to that if you just ask the right questions. And gotcha. People are, I think, a lot nicer, and people are more open. Everyone's going through the same kind of struggles, and kind of like, I'm about to say, we're all in this together. That's the quote from, what is it, High School Musical or something. But I just find that people are, for the most part, really, really nice and really kind, and just treat them that way and try to read people's name tags and call them by name just to rock their world a little bit. It seems to make my days a lot nicer.
Nice. Well, that's really nice. Nice note to end on, Kyle. So, hey, I really enjoyed this conversation.
Absolutely. Kevin, it was great speaking with you.
Doing well. Look for a message from me in the very near future on LinkedIn. And
I shall.
Yeah, best of luck as your career continues to progress.
Fantastic. And stay in touch. If at any point we need to catch up, Certainly open to that.
Will do. Thanks a lot and have a great evening.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Bye.